Good morning, Birdland. I'm Mark Brown. I've been covering the Orioles for more than a decade on CamdenChat.com and hosting this podcast for 95 episodes and counting. It is now February the 5th, 2024. Opening day is 52 days away. The start of spring training is a mere 9 days away. After the week that Orioles fans just had with the news of the pending sale of the team and then the acquisition of the big ace, Corbin Burnes, like just about everybody wanted, I am more impatient than ever for the return of real baseball so that we can see how this team can follow up on the 101-win regular season but swept right out of the playoffs act that it put together last year. In today's episode, I'm going to talk about a few players that I think are collectively being taken for granted that they're just going to come along and be good for the 2024 Orioles, and why I'm a little nervous about each one of these individually and all of these taken together. And specifically, these are players who battled injuries of different kinds last year. And it seems to me that a part of the plan for Orioles' success this year just kind of assumes that they're going to be back to a form closer to the best that we've seen from them, rather than they continue to be hurt or they end up being not very good. And the trio of guys who are on my mind for this are Cedric Mullins, John Means, and Dylan Tate. And I'll tell you right away, I'm sad to have Mullins on this list at all, because his 30 home run, 30 stolen base season was really one of the year-long bright spots of what we hope is the final, for now, bad Orioles team in 2021. His numbers last year were not horrible overall, but it was really a tale of two seasons for Mullins, because there was before he got hurt, and then there was after. And when Mullins hurt his groin for the first of two injuryless stints, he was at an 835 OPS at the end of May, looked pretty good playing center field. And when he returned in mid-August after the second of his two injuryless stints, the rest of the way Mullins had just a 585 OPS for his final 47 games. That's not even counting his 0-for-12 over the three postseason games. Also not counting that it really looked like he did not have his previous speed when tracking down balls in center field. So, you know, as Orioles fans, we all want to believe that the offseason several months layoff means that Mullins is going to have time to get all the way back to normal, that he will be able to come out looking at least like his 2022 self, where he still had 30-plus steals for the year, even if he only hit 16 home runs. Maybe that won't happen, though. Maybe it's going to turn out that Mullins is just going to be susceptible to that kind of injury now while playing at MLB game speed. Maybe its effects are still going to end up being lingering even after a whole offseason to rest it. It could just be the kind of thing where if Mullins was a regular person, it would not be very noticeable in ordinary life. But, you know, for a guy who's a big leaguer, that could be the difference between productivity and replacement level play. If that's the kind of thing that happens, that's really going to put the Orioles in a tough spot of deciding if they have to cut Mullins' playing time, and if they do, what to do about it. And it's also going to put them in a tough spot if, let's say, Colton Cowser is not ready to step up if there is an absence for Mullins, which, as happened last year, Cowser was hurt also at the time Mullins got hurt, so they didn't have their debuts coincide, but Cowser's small sample size last year was not very good. The prospect list still believe in him, unlike Joey Ortiz, who just got traded. Cowser remains in the top 51 on all four of the big lists that have been released so far. So hopefully that's a better sign for Cowser being able to do better than his big league performance last year. But we don't know that. I'm a little bit nervous about it. Okay, next guy. John Means being in this category, well, that's a lot more obvious because there's just so much more uncertainty for a guy who has not had a chance to show that he's back following his Tommy John surgery that he needed early in the 2022 season. And as for Means and Birdland, we're always going to be fond of him since he ended up being the best player of a very bad 2019 Orioles team. Out of nowhere, best player, really. John Means was not one of the guys you would have gone into that season, even knowing who was there, being like, okay, this is one of the guys I'm really going to be looking forward to seeing. He was almost kind of an afterthought, so it was even more fun and surprising that he came out and was good that year, 2019. And of course, his 2021 no-hitter was really one of the single game, really the single game highlight of the tanking period that we just endured. You know, for last year, if Means had been able to return in July, he could have had a half season at least to see what the post-surgery Means looks like. But the back injury that he suffered in the later part of his rehab, he was to the point where he was already throwing again. He was going to start working his way towards getting into games. And then he got set back for about 2 months by, what was it, the teres major strain. So he ended up making only 4 regular season starts. And then, let's not forget, could not pitch in the postseason due to arm soreness, which is not what you want to hear after just 4 games back from Tommy John surgery. It could end up being that Means heroically playing stopper in Cleveland as the Orioles halted a losing streak, won a 2-1 game on September 23rd last year. That could end up being Means' final real moment of glory as an Oriole. And let's keep in mind, even in the years before he needed Tommy John surgery, Means never made 30 starts or more in a season. So probably the Orioles and fans should not be counting on him for 150 or more innings, and maybe not even for 100 or more. Unlike with Mullins, where at least the dreamers, the prospect dreamers among us, can imagine a player being ready to step in if Mullins stumbles, I don't think the immediate prospect depth for the Orioles rotation is quite as good. Now, maybe by midseason, if things are going well in the minors for one or more of Cade Povich, Chase McDermott, Seth Johnson, or even one or two other lower-ranked prospects. Okay, maybe at that point there would be a guy worth trying out. Or, you know, at the trade deadline, the Orioles could trade for someone almost as impactful as Corbin Burns, depending on how much service time before free agency that guy has left at that time. That would probably impact the cost. And how the Orioles are playing through July would probably also impact Mike Elias's willingness to deal out for a better rental than Jack Flaherty, who he traded for last year. I don't know. As far as filling in for Means, maybe Tyler Wells could end up being employed as a long man such that he is staying stretched out enough to jump into the rotation. Maybe he could have good months in the rotation as he did for about 3 months last year. And, you know, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility that Means comes out and makes 30 or 32 starts and is good, and all of this preseason worry is for nothing. Obviously, I would be plenty happy with that outcome. I hope that the Orioles are prepared for a different Means outcome than everything is fine. He does great for the whole year. Thankfully, the acquisition of Corbin Burns does make the Orioles a whole lot more prepared than they were before that trade for potential problems in the rotation, be they with Means or anybody else. And then for a guy in the bullpen, Dylan Tate, who, you know, his missing the entire 2023 season ended up being not nearly as much of a problem as I might have thought last March, thanks to Felix Bautista turning into an elite closer and Yennier Cano having most of a season as an elite setup guy. Of course, Bautista is out for the year thanks to his own Tommy John surgery. Who really knows how much Cano is going to be able to come close to duplicating last year? Then D.L. Hall, who might have been in the late-inning mix, was traded to Milwaukee for Burns. Worth it, I think, but it did subtract someone who I thought was heading for the late innings with the Orioles. And for me, one difference between Tate and the previous two guys is that really by virtue of being a non-closer reliever, he was less critical to the team even in his best year. So it's not like you can say, okay, this guy was great. You know, it's not like Tate was an all-star in 2022, as Cano and Bautista were last year. His 2022 season, it was solid for what turned out to then be an emerging Orioles team. Tate ended up finishing the year with a 3.05 ERA, 3.48 FIP, and a 0.995 WHIP over 67 games. That was a big step forward for him compared to 2021. Any sub-1 WHIP for a reliever is pretty good. And, you know, Tate spent most of the year pitching either 7th or 8th innings. So he was definitely a guy who was getting the experience in later in games. So really, I don't think he needs to be as good as Bautista, of course, so much as he needs to be better than Mike Baumann or Brian Baker, which that is an eminently achievable goal, at least for Tate. My nervousness about him, really, it's more related to general thoughts of, I think it's risky to just project a guy to come back and be fine or good or whatever after he's been gone for a whole year, after just like non-Tommy John worthy forearm problems that were of a mysterious nature. It's weird, a little bit concerning, but both Tate and the team seem positive about his progress. So, you know, we'll see how he looks in spring action. Well, we won't see because the games will not actually get aired on Masson, but someone will see, and then the Orioles can go from there. I will be right back after a message from a Fans First Sports Network sponsor, and then it's time for a dip into the mailbag. And a quick scheduling note before moving on into the mailbag. Next week's podcast is going to be out on Wednesday morning rather than my usual Monday, and that is so that there is an episode releasing on the day that pitchers and catchers report to spring training. Okay, now into the mailbag. Remember, if you have a comment or question you would like to have discussed in this segment in a future episode, you can email camdencastpod@gmail.com. For this episode, we have got a question from listener and repeat question writer Ty, who asks, what are your thoughts on the likelihood of Orioles free agents to receive a qualifying offer at the end of the season? Ty noted that he is specifically interested in hearing what I think about Means and Anthony Santander here. So Ty, thank you for writing in again. For everyone who is not steeped in the arcana of the qualifying offer process, I'm going to do a quick explainer of how that works. This is the process by which teams can potentially get draft pick compensation for departing free agents, and also the process that causes teams who sign these players to potentially forfeit draft picks high up in the draft or maybe a bit later, depending on different things about how your team is in the luxury tax status. Okay, so to start off, as a player is becoming a free agent, a team has to decide whether or not they want to extend him the qualifying offer, which is a one-year contract for the following season that is equal to the mean of the top 125 salaried players in the game. So for the 2024 season, extending a QO, as it is shortened, was a $20.3 million one-year contract for 2024. If the player declines that QO, he then becomes a free agent who will cost his signing team a draft pick. And if he accepts the contract, then that's it. That's his contract. He's back getting that salary for the next year. It is rare, but not unprecedented for players to accept the qualifying offer. As the Orioles discovered a number of years ago now, they had this happen with Matt Wieters, who accepted the qualifying offer for 2016. I think at that time, the Orioles were probably hoping Wieters would decline and they could get the draft pick. But as it turned out, having Wieters on the 2016 Orioles was fine. Maybe that money being tied up for Wieters kept them from being able to pursue starting rotation upgrades as aggressively as they might have. I don't know. But for the most part, you should expect that players are going to decline. And I think for the most part, teams make the offer expecting team players to decline the offer. So, okay. Here is the current list of Orioles players who will be free agents at the end of the season, assuming nothing changes before then. Corbin Burnes, James McCann, John Means, Anthony Santander. There's also the potential for Danny Colome to be a free agent if the team declines his contract option for 2025. We can rule out the backup catcher, McCann, right away. We can also rule out Colome since if he's great this year, the team has a modest $4 million option for next year. And, you know, on the opposite side of this, we can pretty much not worry about talking about Burnes at all because he is a completely obvious QO candidate, as you're going to get, barring a disastrously timed serious injury. So talking about Means and Santander, like since Means is on my list I already discussed of guys we're possibly assuming He's going to have success that he won't actually have. You can guess, I'm not really expecting him to be a QO candidate. I would say if Means throws at least 150 innings, if he shows that pitching in front of Baltimore can cut his career home run rate, and if he keeps his ERA, let's say about 3.90 or below, then in those situations, the team would have an interesting choice to make. Means, he was a former 11th round pick whose signing bonus was probably something like $100,000 out of the draft. He's not really gotten big money out of arbitration years because the timing of his elbow injury and Tommy John surgery means he's only made 6 starts during years 1 and 2 out of 3 of his arbitration years. So the year 3 figure, what he negotiated with the Orioles for this year, it's only $3.3 million, which in ordinary circumstances, if you had a pitcher like Means who in 2022 and 2023 had pitched as well as he did in 2019 and 2021, he'd probably be up like somewhere in the $13 to $15 million range by now, with more money the previous 2 years. But all of this is to say that I think if Means is offered $20 million as the QO for 1 year, he's maybe going to be even more likely to jump on that than other players. So the Orioles would have to be confident, I think, that Means is going to be at least a 2.5 win pitcher in the 2025 rotation. And I don't think Means is going to pitch in 2024, either with that quality or durability to give that kind of confidence to the team. Now, Santander, he is a really interesting case because he's a switch hitter. He's got a 33 home run season under his belt. He walks at acceptable rates. His defense gets acceptable marks for a corner outfield spot. On the other hand, by the time he is a free agent or at least facing a QO decision, he will be 30 years old. He's going to turn 30 in October of this year. Santander, he's not a player who has the kind of past elite performance that might lead him to expect a lucrative contract as a free agent. He's not even really been consistently good because the 2021 season was an interruption of what might have otherwise been a multi-year run of quality that might have you convinced, okay, this is a guy who's going to be continuing on this path. But still, he did hit 33 home runs in 2022 while posting a 2.1 wins above replacement season. He had a 3 WAR season last year. So I do think if Santander once again runs about a 120 OPS plus, which is, again, 20% better than the average hitter in the league when adjusting for parks that are being played in, I think that would make him a borderline QO guy. Any better, and it will be even more tempting for the Orioles to offer him one any worse, and I think he will be an easy, hey, thanks for everything, good luck as a free agent choice. I will say I think the likelihood of Santander getting a QO could also depend on the development of Orioles outfield prospects, because if either Heston Kerstad or Colton Cowser is a right fielder of the future, you maybe don't want to risk Santander taking up $20 million of 2025 payroll, because I think even if the new ownership group comes in and is willing to expand the payroll, I think that is money that's going to be better spent on the 2025 rotation than it is money spent on Anthony Santander. But if the Orioles are not confident in Kerstad or Cowser, or if those guys, you know, don't play well, you know, during the 2024 season, then really 1 more year of Santander as a bridge to something else starts to look like a better proposition. And worth considering also one more bit of QO arcana. For the Orioles, they're only going to get a pick after the first round if Santander's or whoever's next contract exceeds $50 million in guaranteed value. If it's less than $50 million, the team who loses that player gets a pick after the second round instead. So the potential benefit of Santander signing elsewhere would be lower for the Orioles to be willing to take the risk of offering the QO. And Santander, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that he would be a guy who would be in line for a $50 million contract unless he was really, really great. So, I mean, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you definitely know I'm not an optimist by nature, so I'm really having a tough time imagining either Means or Santander actually ending the 2024 season as QO guys. I would be happy to be wrong, and of course, I am anticipating the Orioles will at least get one bonus draft pick for this process, thanks to now having traded for Corbin Burns. So that's basically going to work out to the Orioles traded a competitive balance round A pick to the Brewers for this year's draft in getting Burns, and they're probably going to get roughly the same spot pick as the compensation pick for a Burns qualifying offer, I assume. So that's where I'm at. I think they'll get one. I don't think they're going to get two. I just don't think Means or Santander are going to be on that level. So thank you again for the question, Ty. And again, for anyone else who would like to write in, CamdenCastPod@gmail.com is the address to get yourself into a future episode's mailbag. That is all that I've got for today. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please do subscribe on your favorite platform. Again, a reminder, next week's episode will be released Wednesday instead of my usual Monday to coincide with pitchers and catchers reporting to Sarasota. Good Morning Birdland is a Camden Cast production on the Fans First Sports Network. This is Mark Brown, signing off.